We would love to introduce to you our guest, Mr. Steve Snyder, a graduate from UCLA with a BA degree in economics and has lived in Cerro Beach, California since 1972. After 36 years in national sales and sales management, he retired from a vision service plan in 2009. Soon after retirement, Steve began his quest to learn about the World War II experiences of his father, pilot Howard Snyder, and his crew of the B-17, Susan Ruth, named after his older sister. It became his passion, and after 4.5 years of dedicated research, resulted in his book, Shot Down, which has received over 20 national book awards. One result of his new career as a World War II historian is that he is a member of numerous World War II organizations and president of the 306th Bomb Group Historical Association. Reviews have been stellar. Publishers Weekly wrote, "The book is a great introduction to the history of the U.S. air war in Europe, humanized by the experience of a single bomber crew." And from the Forward Clarion Review, 5-star rating, "Snyder's masterful book puts the reader inside the cockpit, shoulder to shoulder with the pilot and crew, accessible and relevant both to historians and readers with a casual interest in World War II history. Shot Down is a must-read for anyone with an interest in this gripping period of American history." That was by Claire Foster. Steve, welcome to the show, and if you could give us some more information about yourself, we're so excited to have you here.
Well, thank you. It's great to be here. I really appreciate it. Yeah, I was born in Pasadena, California, and I lived all my life in California. And married with a couple three grown sons now. And my passion besides the history of the air war over Europe is gardening. Here in Seal Beach, I have a virtual botanical garden that I like to work in. There's over 75 different species of palm trees planted in the ground and all sorts of different tropical plants. So that kind of gives me a rest from doing other things. But I travel all across the United States attending air shows where I sign copies of my book, and I do a lot of speaking as well at all sorts of different types of organizations.
Wow, that's amazing. I just want to ask you about the book. Did your father talk much about the war with you?
Well, he talked some. I knew the basics of my dad's World War II history growing up, but it wasn't until I retired in 2009 that I really had the time to delve into his World War II history in further detail. My parents had kept a lot of materials from the war years, and I just wanted to go through that and learn more. It was never my intention at that time to write a book. My dad had written a diary that about his plane being shot down. He wrote that while he was missing in action. After his plane was shot down, he was missing in action for 7 months, but he evaded capture. And his diary was absolutely riveting. And my mother also kept all the letters that my dad had written to her during the war. And reading those were absolutely fascinating. And that just, I became fascinated with the subject of my dad and his crew, and it became my passion. But he really didn't talk a lot about it growing up until 1989. In Belgium, the little village of Mackenwas, they erected a memorial to my dad and his crew. And he went over with the three other crew members who were still living at the time for the dedication. And there he was reunited with a lot of the Belgian people that hit him during the war and saw different houses where he was hidden. And that brought it all back, and he started talking about it after that. But prior to that, like most World War II veterans, he didn't really talk about it too much.
Wow,
and then
that's
really
amazing.
I was fortunate to make my first trip to Belgium in 1994 with my parents. And then I saw everything firsthand, and that's really when it became personal for me.
Okay. That was actually going to be my next question, was whether or not he talked about the war with you a lot. But, I mean, so after he went back to Belgium, did he open up more and give you maybe additional details that he didn't record in his diary? Like, what prompted you to actually say, hey, I need to put this in book form?
Well, after I read his diary and all those letters that he had written to my mother, I started reading book after book about the air war over Europe. I went on the internet and spent countless hours doing research, downloading declassified military documents. And I joined a number of World War II organizations and started going to reunions and listening to veterans tell their stories. And finally, it was in 2012 when I actually came to the conclusion that the story of my dad and his crew was so unique and so compelling that it needed to be told, and people needed to read about it. So I decided to write a book, even though I had no prior, writing training or prior to that.
Wow. So can you tell us, well, what was the hardest part of writing the book for you?
Well, probably just organizing all the information that I had. I was really fortunate to have so much information, not only from my father, but some of the other crew members that survived the war. A B-17 bomber had a 10-man crew. Five of them made it back home, but five of them did not. But the ones who did, some of them wrote accounts about it. But I probably wouldn't even have written a book if it hadn't been for two Belgian gentlemen who were young boys during the war, and they saw firsthand the atrocities committed about against their family and friends. And later in life, they became local historians. They interviewed many people and Belgian people and members of the underground about events that took place involving my dad and his crew, and they documented their testimony. And they provided me with unbelievably detailed information and also pictures from that time period that would have been lost forever without their research. So I owe them a deal for all their the research and information that they gave to me.
Yeah, that was actually leading into another question, was how you were able to fill in the gaps and create such a vivid picture of life during the war. So it was pretty much, owed to those gentlemen for opening that up to you. Or was there additional information that helped you piece it together?
It's the story of my dad and his crew was all based on firsthand testimony by the people who were involved in the events, either members of my dad's crew or members of the Belgium underground. But then, fortunately, through the internet and a lot of mission reports and squadron diaries that are declassified now that are available, I was able to fill in the picture quite a bit. And then what was really unbelievable is that I found the German Luftwaffe pilot that shot down my dad's plane and interviewed him for the book. And he gave me some wonderful insight about that time period. Fortunately for me, he became a translator after the war, so he speaks English. He's actually still alive.
Wow. That is pretty amazing. I'm just trying to wrap my mind about like what this experience might have been for you. Were you ever uncomfortable bringing up, these old memories as you, from then?
No, it was just fascinating to me. I was just so engaged with the story. Really what I added to the book, the biggest challenge, like you were asking me, was just organizing all of this and trying to put it in a framework and down on paper where it would read and smoothly and make a story, wouldn't be fragmented. And then what I added really was just a great amount of detail of historical information and anecdotes about and surrounding the war to put it in context and give it background.
Okay.
And
so
I probably,
was there?
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Go ahead. No, you're
fine. I was
going
to say another big challenge I had is I didn't want it to be, just another war book for guys. I wanted it to appeal to the general public, even people who had little or no interest in World War II, to make it a story about people and the human spirit that the general public that would be interested and enjoy reading.
RL, can I interrupt here for a minute, for a second?
Yeah.
Do you mind?
Mm-hmm.
You know what, Steve, one of the things that I read the book, and I have to commend you did an amazing job because you did just that. You backed up each part of the story with background information for those that didn't know why things were happening. I can't recall one, but I remember reading it and saying, oh, that's really neat for somebody who wouldn't know those things. It explains it. But I have to tell you, I found the book tender and emotional, especially the home front part. I thought you did an amazing job just evoking the feelings of your mother and the other, how the families banded together when they didn't hear from them. I thought it was much, so much more than just a recounting of, you know, the crew. I was really touched. There were parts where I choked up when I was reading. It really was phenomenal, I have to tell you.
Oh, well, thank you very much. Yeah, in addition to letters that my dad wrote, I had letters that family members of the crew, mothers or wives or girlfriends as well. So I think that's one thing that does make it personal, is that I included excerpts from a lot of those letters to give it a more personal
feel. Oh, my God. Your father's letters to your mother, it was just so sweet, you know, how he was so in love with her. And you could feel his loneliness and how much he missed her and how much she missed him. And then the parents of those boys who didn't come home and how they rallied around whoever was coming home. I think people have no idea what war means until they see, you know, or they can feel. You gave such an accounting that it brought it home. That, you know, it's not just black and white pictures on the TV. This was real war, with people dying, people missing, and for 8 months they didn't know if they were alive or dead, and how the parents and the mothers and the wives babies were born while, you know, fathers were missing. It was really touching, and I was emotional. When I started the book, I didn't realize that some of them weren't going to come home, and I was really upset about it.
Yeah, it was some of the guys that were killed. It was really, really tragic.
R.L.
Like
when I
say,
read about, yes, it was really tragic, and it reminded me of that The Great Escape. Do you remember the Steve McQueen movie?
Yeah.
I do. Did you ever see that, R.L., that movie?
I have not.
Oh, it was a big movie in the 60s, and it was a true story about American airmen, soldiers behind German lines who try to escape. And this book, when I was reading it, you know, it was so much like that. R.L., I'm quiet now. Please go on with your gorgeous interview. Go ahead.
No problem. I'm sure Steve did not mind. Well, the next question I wanted to ask you was, did you consider any information that you got, you know, off limits that you just didn't want to put in your book? Anything like that? Just too emotional for you to bring up?
No, not really. I wanted to tell the story, you know, the good and the bad, the heroic, the painful. I just wanted to tell it as it was and how it happened. So I really didn't try to keep anything out or keep anything back. Also, though, I didn't want to add anything to it. I didn't want to insert,
yeah,
you know, my feelings or my assumptions. I just wanted to be all based on what they felt at the time, the people that lived through that.
Wow. I mean, that definitely shows with, you know, the reviews and feedback that you're getting. And what do you think the families of the crew and your father would say about the book?
Well, yeah, my father died in 2007, and as I mentioned, I didn't decide to write the book until 2012. So, you know, it's a shame that he isn't around to see that. But, you know, during my research, one of the things that I did is I went on a quest to try to find relatives of all my dad's crew, of the other 9 crew members. And I was able to find relatives of all the crew. And I asked them for any information that they had, letters, newspaper articles, anything. And I found, which is actually most often with people that most relatives of guys who fought in World War II know very little about their vets' World War II experiences, whether it's a, you know, a daughter, a son, a niece, a nephew, a grandchild, because most of those guys didn't talk about it. And so I was able to provide, you know, these relatives a lot of information about their loved ones that they really weren't aware of. And we became kind of a family in 2014 on the 70th anniversary of the event and the liberation in Belgium. There was about 25 of us that went over for the celebrations, which was really cool. And then in two more years with the 75th anniversary in 2019, I'm hoping that maybe we can get about 50 to go over it. It's a wonderful experience. The people in Belgium are marvelous people. To this day, they're still so grateful and thankful for the Americans coming to their rescue and liberating them from Nazi oppression. And they do a great job of educating the younger generations to remember as well. I've made some lifelong dear friends in Belgium.
Oh, that's amazing. So you mentioned something earlier when you said that some of the relatives weren't even, you know, aware of some of what, you know, their ancestors had gone through. So, you know, for people like that, why do you think it's important for them to read a book like this? I mean, I'm thinking that's a great reason in and of itself. But, you know, what would you tell someone who was interested but didn't know a whole lot about that era and why they should read the book to connect to it?
Well, you know, these are World War II, you know, it's over 70 years since then. And, you know, as time goes by, that the memory and the history fades. And it's important never to forget the sacrifice that those men made to fight for freedom. And to realize, you know, what they went through, what their families went through, and the hardship at that time. Because the world, World War II, it changed the course of America and changed the course of the world forever. It was the most, there was no other event in history that affected more people than World War II. So it's important to know, you know, what took place and what those, I believe the greatest generation, you know, went through to maintain freedom for our country.
You know, I don't mean to interrupt, you don't mind, right, Arl?
But not at all.
I think that what Steve wrote is like a living history. Because you technically you're not a historian, right, Steve?
Correct.
So for you to write a story like, you know, a book like this, it's really almost a real testimony. You know, it's not those kind of history books that come out. It's not dry history. This is the story of people. And I think it's so important. I think that they were strong and silent, and they didn't talk. All my uncles were vets from World War II, and my father was a survivor. So, you know, they didn't talk about it. And I don't even think we ever heard of the term post-traumatic stress. Would you agree, Steve?
Right. Back then it was called shell shock or flak happy and, you know, other terms for it. But no
right.
one really
understood
it.
I think you had that in the book, too. The flak suit. And I think you mentioned flak happy. I don't remember, but I remember reading about the flak suit. And I thought about 12 O'Clock High. Do you remember that movie? I used to watch a lot of those movies. But
Yeah. 12 O'Clock High was actually based on a true story about the 306 bomb group, which my father was in.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I love that movie, yeah. But they didn't talk about it, you know. It's like they had their movies, they, you know, with Robert Stack or whoever, you know, John Wayne. But they didn't talk about it. And this book is so important because it's a real chronicle, and it wasn't written so much past it, like not hundreds of years, you know, but enough time that you were dealing with, I mean, I feel World War II, I wasn't born during World War II, but I sort of feel it. Do you know what I mean? Like I feel connected to it. I mean, I'm born because of World War II. My husband was born because of World War II. People met in the aftermath of the war and stuff. But because it really humanizes history, and I think that's the problem with a lot of books. People don't read if they feel it's history. They don't want to read it because they think they'll be bored. And the book is anything but boring because it's a real microcosm of 10 guys and what they really went through. It's a real terrific book.
Well, thank you. Yeah, actually, the way I kind of look at it, it's two books in one. You know, it is a history of the air rover Europe and what took place. But the story of my dad and his crew and the families, it reads like a novel.
Yes.
Even though it's all based on, you know, facts. It's such an, and that's why I decided to write a book, because it was just such an incredible story about these men and their families, and really also those unbelievably brave Belgian people who risked their lives helping down the airmen. They were amazing people to do that.
Yeah, I get the chills when I think about it. Like, how brave were they? They were living essentially behind enemy lines. They were occupied, and yet they were willing to hide these men. And it was no easy feat, because everybody knew what was going on. And I mean, it was small. These were small towns, correct? It's not like it was a big city. And,
oh, just little hamlets.
Right. Everybody knew.
Little villages. Yeah.
And they had them in their in back rooms, or in, you know, hidden. You know, they were on the farm or whatever. And it was a death sentence if you were caught. I mean, this was a death sentence. How brave, you know, I often wonder, could I be that brave? Would I be that brave? It scares me to think of what those people had to make. This wasn't they had children. They had to make a decision. And how deep were their convictions that they were willing to risk their lives and their kids' lives?
Exactly.
It's really when humanity... It was one of those times when you say that humanity was at its worst and at its best. You know, for everything that was at the worst, there were people who were at their best. You know,
absolutely.
And it was a really good book, and I think people have to know about it. People, I think we don't talk about World War II so much anymore, even the Vietnam War. You know, the Korean War. We don't really.
No. And
we owe these soldiers everything. I mean, you know, I everywhere I see a soldier, I thank them for, you know, for their service. Because
you make a good point. You make a good point when you say that. You know, could I have done that? Could I have been brave enough to do that? You know, and it's a question that you never know until you're in it. But like you say, those Belgian people and you know, there were several of the people that aided my dad and his crew that were sent to concentration camps or who were killed.
Well, my father was hidden by a former governess of his, and she hid him, and he was found out by a schoolmate, and he ended up in a concentration camp. And I think about, you know, I wish I could write. I've tried to write about World War II, but I find I'm too emotionally connected that when I start to write about it, it kills me. I mean, like I'm sitting and sobbing. I commend you that you were able to detach yourself enough to piece this giant puzzle of your father's, you know, life. I mean, it's hard what you did. You took raw data and you pieced it together. That's really commendable, and it was a giant undertaking. I don't know if people realize. And you stayed true to facts. You made sure you were accurate. I mean, this was a huge undertaking. Were you bored when you finished? Like, did you sit there and say, "Oh my God, what am I going to do now?"
Well, no. Actually, writing this book has totally changed my life. You know, I retired in 2009, and I was, you know, living the easy life of the retiree, getting up late, taking naps, going for long walks, and. Once I started my research, and now I basically work full time every day promoting my book.
Right.
I'm on the computer hours every day doing promotion on social media or trying to contact anyone that might recommend the book or read the book. And again, booking speaking engagements and traveling to air shows around the country. So it's actually a full-time job that I'm involved in. Fortunately for me, prior to writing the book, I had a 40-year career in sales. So really now I'm just selling something different. I'm selling the story in my book. So, you know, most authors don't have that luxury to have that sales background that, what you really need to, you know, I mean, you have to promote your own book. Unless you're a celebrity or a famous person, no one's going to, getting an exposure is the toughest thing.
Isn't that the truth,
exactly.
RL?
It definitely is. I love that you said that because you are a salesman. And I just, you know, sitting here and listening to, you know, how passionate and how much the book is seriously important and how you say, you know, you're on social media promoting your book and you took out an ad in the magazine for, you know, a half page ad for the magazine. So, you know, you can get that exposure. So, you know, I'd like to keep that ad in the magazine and run it for the next year, you know, at no charge, just so people can get the opportunity, hopefully, to see it and, you know, get this book and, you know, help you in your endeavors to spread this story because it seems to be, because I haven't read it yet, just listening to Carol and reading the reviews, it just seems something pretty amazing that, you know, I'm going to invest my time in looking into, and hopefully others will as well. It seems like an important story that needs to be front and center.
Well, I thought, you know, it was, and it, the response has really been so rewarding, both from professional reviewers and the general public, and I'm really humbled by it. The highest praise I can possibly get, which I just blows me away, is when World War II vets and actually members of the 8th Air Force who went through it themselves read it and commend me on it. Because that's the highest praise I can possibly get because they were there,
well,
they lived it.
Created a monument. You know, you created a monument to their, you know, a lot of people get lost after the war. You know, there's so many people who are involved, thousands, millions of soul, whatever you want to call it, and there's so many, and they you know, occasionally somebody gets a medal, but how many really get recognized? You know, they come back, it's hard to get jobs, whatever, you know, if it's an unpopular war, they come back and they're not even welcome, they're, you know, not welcomed back into society. And here you made a monument that will be forever a part of history itself. You've created history by relaying their history. Who knows, in 100 years from now, maybe people are going to use your book as a reference to what it was like for a single bomber squadron. I mean, that's a real important thing you did.
Well, it was an honor and a privilege for me to do so. You know, sometimes I look at the book and go, did I really write that book?
Yeah, I know that feeling.
It was a lot of work.
Yeah. Well, I think, Steve, can you give your links, RL, right? You don't mind if he gives his links right now?
No, of course not. I was just going to ask you, like, where can people find you and your books online?
Okay, well, of course, on Amazon. And, of course, any library or bookstore can order it through their book wholesale distributor, Barnes & Noble or what have you. My website is stevesnyderauthor.com, and if somebody wants an autographed copy, they can order one off my website. And then I'm on Twitter, I'm on LinkedIn, Facebook. I have a personal Facebook page, Steve Snyder, and then I also have an author page, Steve Snyder, author of Shot Down. And I like I mentioned earlier, I'm on social media a lot. Yeah, if you want to get exposure for your book, you really have to work at it every day. It's tough.
Steven, do you go under Steven or Steve Snyder, and can you spell your name?
Yeah, Steve, S-T-E-V-E, Snyder, S-N-Y-D-E-R.
Yeah, that's just so that people will know which Steve Snyder they should look for.
Yeah, there
not
is
the
another Steve Snyder
guy.
Author out there. But
yeah.
You can tell very easily if you get me, because it's all about B-17 planes and about the war and World War II and things associated with that.
Awesome. Okay, so we're going to make sure that those links are on our personal Facebook and Twitter, or not personal, but the magazine and radio show, so that people can get a link directly to your website and to Amazon so that they can purchase the book.
Thank
Wonderful.
You so much. That was a great interview.
Thank you. Oh, well, thank you. I really enjoyed it. You guys are great.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining us tonight, Steve. I'm R.L. Jackson, and you've been listening to an interview with indie author Steven Snyder on Navigating Indie World Radio Show. We'll be right back with some indie tips and shout-outs. Okay. So we're not doing the commercial or the theme, so we're going to go right back in and finish out the show. Give me one moment here. Okay. Welcome back. You are listening to Navigating Indie World on Podfire Radio, and this is your host, R.L. Jackson, with Carol P. Roman. And Julie isn't here tonight, but they co-authored Navigating Indie World, A Beginner's Guide to Self-Publishing and Marketing Your Book. Deborah Hendry, a reviewer on Amazon, said about Steve Snyder's book, purchased as a gift for a 95-year-old vet that was in the Pacific while his brother was in Europe. He couldn't put it down. He said it was the first book he had read in years. The book brought back so many memories for him and provided great conversation for the family, excellent account of war, and great read for all ages. Highly recommended.
You know, that was a really special interview. I think that it's a tremendous responsibility to, you know, this is not writing about unicorns where you can kind of make it up as you go along. You know, he has an obligation to be true to the facts and present them. And even facts sometimes can have different viewpoints. I mean, can you imagine talking to the fellow who shot your father down? I mean, like...
No, yeah.
That
I definitely
courageous.
Couldn't. That's courageous, and it's just like... It's one of those, just listening to the story, I could already see the Oscar-nominated movie that hopefully will be made because of it, because it seems like it's something that is, you know, up there with Saving Private Ryan and, you know, just something that is a life story, not something just made up like Saving Private Ryan. So it definitely seems like something that's pretty awesome and amazing, and I'm just glad we were able to have him on the show and talk about it.
Yeah, I thought it was like a really interesting show, and the fact that it was based on real life just made it that much more fascinating. And we have an obligation not to forget. I mean, I just wrote an article on a magazine called Medium. It's an online magazine. I don't know if you saw it, but I told a story about my grandmother who was a storyteller. And storytelling is an art. And I think one of the biggest problems is we don't listen to each other anymore. You know, we're so busy and we're so distracted by our devices, and like Steve said, he's promoting 24/7, that we don't really talk anymore with each other. We've stopped. And I think we have to open up storytelling again. We have to, you know, we have to tell our histories to our children, and we have to save the history. You know, it's a resource, and we have to save it.
I definitely agree. And for anyone listening, if you missed Steve's links, remember to find them on our Facebook pages, Navigating Indie World and Indie Authors Monthly. His website is www.stevesnyderauthor.com. And you can also find him on Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, among others.
Now, if Julie were here today, she would say check out Del Henderson's The Unicorn Hunter with a perfect 5 in reviews. It's got a perfect score of 5. Looks like the start of an intriguing series. The Unicorn Hunter begins with the total destruction of attorney Jack Tanner's life. After his wife dies from cancer, he dissolves into a bottle, becoming a drunk, and ignores his small daughter. Abigail becomes involved with an imaginary mythical creature and mysteriously dies. Jack comes out of his stupor and begins a guilt-ridden journey to find out what or who murdered his daughter. It leads him on a chase to the truth in Dublin, where the history of his family supplies him with clues to a demon intent on murder. The book was like an episode of The Twilight Zone. The more you read, the more you had to read. The ending was satisfying, and readers will enjoy this new series.
Little Miss History by Barbara Mojica has an average of 4.9 stars. Little Miss History travels to Intrepid Air, Sea, and Space Museum, in a wonderful addition to Barbara Ann Mojica's terrific series. This book celebrates the great history of the Intrepid, an aircraft carrier that saw action in several American conflicts. Mojica traces the battle history of the ship, mentioning courageous acts of brave seamen and the things they did to save their fellow sailors. After the ship was decommissioned, it fell into disrepair and a couple bought it, creating it into a museum for all to enjoy. The ship served as headquarters for the FBI during 9/11 and today celebrates its rich history in protecting America's freedoms. Lovely book, great illustrations, and a terrific way to cover some diverse history of the United States of America.
Yeah, that's another book that deals with, you know, the service people. It was an interesting book. It outlines, like, also the African-American contribution to the ship, which was really fascinating. And it's a quick read. It was a great little book. You know, Balanced by M.J. Wood takes us to a whole different subject, and it has a 4.6 rating. Alexis Green has lost her husband. She's a widow and still in her 20s. She's bitter and lost, out of balance. Aiden Pierce's life has been an elevator ride, starting out as low as one can be. He goes with a meteoric rise to both fame and fortune. He's bored, unsatisfied, and troubled with night terrors born from his abused childhood. Life is a big bag of suck for both of them, and when opposite ends of the business deal brings them together, it's a slow, sexy sizzle to a finish line. Alexis is no weak and submissive female, and Aiden is, well, Aiden's perfect. MJ Wood writes a grown-up romance with a real story. Told in alternating chapters, in the first person, she captures two distinct voices and manages to develop characters that are not cliché. Balance is what both characters need, and it'll be interesting to see where the next book takes them in their journey together. So we just listed three really diverse books, plus we had all those books in the beginning. And, you know, the indie world is really terrific because pretty much we write what we want to write. You know, we're not being told by some guy in a big, you know, office building saying, okay, we think Regency romance is going to be the thing, only write Regency romance. Indies write what they feel and what they love. And maybe Steve's book wouldn't have been written if a traditional publisher might have said nobody's interested in one crew. They would want a book about, you know, many crews or whatever. And here he took this subject and he wrote it. And I think it's really great that indies do it. But the problem is, we take the time. He devoted so many years of his life. We didn't even ask how many years of his life was devoted to writing the book. MJ wrote, you know, Barbara Ann, you, me, Julie, we all write. And it's so hard to get noticed, right, RL?
Yeah, definitely is. You know, Steve said it a few times tonight that he's constantly promoting himself and, you know, trying to get his book shown out there for everybody to see. And if you're not doing the work, you know, it's hard to get even a little smidgen of that. And it's even, you know, harder when you're doing the work and it still doesn't happen. So that kind of brings us to, you know, a little short, you know, discussion we were having the other day about how we continue in the face of disappointment when you don't have money, you know, a ton of money to throw at advertisements or hire a PR firm to do everything for you. Reviews are harder than ever to get.
Right.
It seems people are afraid to put a review up for fear that it will be taken down. And then everything is expensive. If you want to do a blog tour or anything having to do with promoting your book, it's getting more and more expensive, you know, to keep going. And, you know, it brings up a subject that, you know, some authors, like I see it every day on Facebook, where they give a final farewell, you know, I've given it my all and it's not working out for me, I'm done. And it's like, well, what point do you, you know, call it quits? And, you know, if you do call it quits, I think to me, it brings up the whole, why are you doing it in the first place?
Because you know, that's
you can't
a really
just give up.
Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, why do we do it? I just wrote that I'm writing an article also for another place now. Look at this. I started out writing because my kids made a contest, right? They said to me, come on, everybody come in Monday morning to work and we all have a book. And I created my first book. I didn't know it was going to turn into 70-odd books. I mean, like, 5 years. That's a lot of books to do. And it's a diverse group, you know, from history to culture to, you know, early root. I've done it all, even adult fiction. I've done two nonfiction books. So I've done the whole thing. Let me tell you something, RL. It really changed in the 6 years that I'm doing this. When we started out, it was much easier to get those reviews. It was much easier to there were more outlets for people to advertise and get their book out there, and we sold more books. It's getting harder and harder now. And you have to think twice before you take that blog tour. You have to think twice before you spend the money, because it's only how much are you going to make if you spend X amount of dollars on a blog tour? If you spend $100 on a blog tour or $100 to advertise your book, how many books do you have to sell in order to make that back? It's getting harder and harder to make back the money.
Exactly. And it is. And it's even harder for those who, you know, at the very beginning when I started my journey, a lot of people said, oh, you know, a new author, you know, usually puts their book up at 99 cents. Well, I'm sorry, but I put in a year or more of hard work making sure that editing was correct and researching the subject, researching the industry, making sure that I was putting out quality products, and to turn around and sell it for 99 cents. When you're only getting a 35% commission, to get that $100 back, you're going to have to sell a ton of books. And
right.
That, to me, is diminishing your own brand. Like, I mean, for me, not for everybody else. Like, if it's a novella and, you know, depending on how that author feels, they can do what they want. But, you know, it just depends. Because even if a $3.99 book, you're only making $2.74. Once royalties are out of that. So do that times however many to make your $100 back. That's still, you know, you need a good amount of books being sold and visibility to get your $100 investment back.
Well, you know, there's two trains of thought on that. And, I really wrestle with it because I handle my son's books too. He writes adults, he writes self-help, and he writes paranormal romances, and everybody knows who he is, and I do his work as well. You know, I handle all of our problem is if you raise the price and the book doesn't get bought, that book then falls into the high limits of Amazon and it just doesn't get seen. Really, you need visibility, and one of the best visibility is if your book is low ranking, it comes up the first 100 books of the, you know, that's what you want. You want in that first 100 books. And there is the other side where you say, I invested X amount of money to produce this book. For me, it's the illustrators cost a fortune. And, you know, of course, even with my son's book, we do editing. I do 3 rounds of editing. That all those things cost money. Nobody says, look, I'll do it for free for you. Nobody's sitting there saying, I want to waste my time and do all your stuff for free. Everybody wants to get paid so that by the time you finish, it's really a conundrum. Do I charge more and at least make back what I invested, or do I charge less, get the book visible, and hopefully sell it? It will keep selling because if it's attached to a good book, or if it's, you know what I mean by attached. Like, in other words, if let's say a lot of people who buy, for argument's sake, a Stephen King book, then buy your book, your book will come up when Stephen King's book comes up, and that's pretty much a great way to sell your book. It gets like kind of swept in with you know, the bestseller, and that happened to two of my son's books, and he sold thousands and thousands of copies of those three particular books he sold. Then when they fell off, I raised the price on those books. They went up the Amazon rating, and we're having trouble selling them. And it's frustrating. It's frustrating because to run an ad in a newspaper or to do a radio show or to advertise, with all those things cost so much money. And it gets to a point that you say, how much should I invest in this project? You know?
Definitely. Definitely. I mean, and there's a lot of things that come into play. You know, there's certain stipulations even for doing certain blogs. You have to have a certain amount of, say, reviews to even get a blog to look at you or get an interview sometimes. So for those who struggle with, you know, only 5 reviews, but, you know, most places want 15 or 20, even, you know, it's hard to even give money, people to give your book attention in that way as well. So it's just a lot of things that come into play with, I think, a book, but you have to have a solid plan in the beginning. And that's something that I can admit I didn't have when I started. I didn't know as much as I know now, but I wish I had done more research first and had a better plan, better marketing plan. And not, you know, you don't have to hire somebody to do that. It's just about doing some personal research, I think, about your industry and people who are doing well in that industry, and then ironing out something that you can feasibly do before you jump in. And, you know, with all these huge expectations, and then, you know, things kind of fall from under you. But and not always fall from under you, because my book did really well at the beginning, and I didn't know anything about rankings and algorithms, and people were like, are you kidding? You're a brand new author, nobody knows you, and your book has stayed consistently in this spot where other people, you know, can't get
right
there. And I thought, well,
right,
you know, that's kind of cool. But if I had a plan, I think it would have done much better. And I would definitely give that piece of advice to new people coming aboard, to just take a beat, make sure your book is perfect, but before you rush to, you know, hit publish, have some sort of plan in place for contingencies in case it doesn't go exactly how you foresee it.
You can't quit. Well, this is my best advice. I tell people, you can't quit your day job. You know, you got a plan of this almost as a part-time, or if you're in retirement like Steve is. I'm not retired, but I treat it as a full-time job. I think you know how many hours I spend on all this stuff, the related book stuff. It sucks up your whole life. But you really, in the beginning, you really have to know that you better have an income. Don't rely on this taking off. Chances of it going into Shades of Gray, 50 Shades of Gray, or, you know, Mockingjay territory. You know, you may have written the best book in the world, but it's really hard to get it and sustain it in that number one position. And, you know, like even with my son's book, one of his books took off right away. It got hooked up to a very big bestseller, but it came to an end. And now we are pushing it like crazy to get it back up there. And it's expensive and it's hard. And we couldn't support ourselves on what the book is earning. You know, I mean, he got picked up by a publisher, so he's a different story at this point. But that's the flip side. All of the work that we did made him visible to an agent, producers entertainment agents and things like that. So I think because we did what we did, he slid through the eye of the needle, but not everybody. Mm-hmm. I didn't, you know, one of us did, one of us didn't. But it's a slog. It's hard work.
Mm-hmm.
I think
definitely.
When we close the show, we have to, you know, for tonight, we have to say to people, make sure that you have a plan. And know that it's going to cost mm-hmm. money to get it there. And I always, like I said, don't quit your day job. You know, keep your job going.
Definitely keep your job going. Have a good plan, and don't give up. You know, this is your passion. You know, regardless of what any algorithm or any ranking on any website says, you keep going. You don't let that discourage you either. If it was just, you know, a hobby, then, you know, you have different priorities. But if it's something that you're passionate about, you keep your head up and you keep moving forward.
I agree.
So I guess, yeah, with that, we're going to conclude the show. And don't forget, if you missed the links from our guest today, Mr. Steve Snyder, you can find them on our website at indieauthorsmonthly.com. And you can also find it on our social media, Indie Authors Monthly, Navigating Indie World, and be sure to look us up on our discussion boards on Goodreads as well. And this is R.L. Jackson saying thanks for joining us, and remember to support the indie community, the real voice of art in America. Remember, they need reviews. And please look for the next edition of our magazine coming out in December. And I think I'm going to hand it to Carol now.
Well, this is Carol P. Roman saying, I am proud, and if Julie were here, she'd say, I am strong.
And this is R.L. Jackson saying, I am indie. Good night.
Practical Polly Radio. I've switched to cooking with healthier oils. So now what do I do with all these tubs of lard? Skinny jeans feeling too tight. A bit of lard on your hips and thighs and those pants slide on like a dream. So there's no need for that lard to go to waste. But get your best heart-healthy trade-up with healthier oils, like canola, olive, or other vegetable oils, which can actually lower your chances for heart disease. Learn more at heart.org/facethefats. Canola Info is the national supporter of the American Heart Association's Face the Fats campaign.
You bring your phone everywhere. Work, school, the movies. Now you can bring it to an Xfinity store for an easy way to switch to Xfinity Mobile, a new kind of network designed to save you money. You can get up to 5 lines of talk and text included with Xfinity Internet at no extra cost, so all you pay for is data. It's never been easier to switch to Xfinity Mobile and keep the phone you love. Click here to see how. Sorry, I gotta take this. Restrictions apply. Limited to select mobile phones. Requires activation of a new line of Xfinity Mobile. Up to 5 devices per account. New Xfinity Internet customers limited to up to 2 lines pending activation of Internet service.
The New York Times, Rolling Stone, and critics everywhere are all raving about Annihilation.
It's not destroying. It's making something new.
It's a mind-blowing experience. And now it's certified fresh on Rotten Tomatoes. Annihilation. Rated R. Now playing.